Welcome to Talk of the Town. So great to be back again this month. My name is Lisa Dascoli and my co-host, Annie Weiss.
Hi, Lisa. How you doing?
Very good, Ann. How are you?
Good.
You know, we are missing our dear friend, Richard Skipper.
He is well missed.
He is very missed, but he is having a wonderful time. He's off in Malibu right
now. I know,
now.
And he didn't invite me, and I'm not okay with that.
I know. Well, I'm sure he's sitting poolside somewhere having a cocktail. So, Richard, we miss you, we love
you,
and we're extremely jealous.
Bring me presents.
Yes. So we'll have him back next month as well. Really exciting show this month.
Yeah, it's going to be good.
This is something very near and dear to my heart because this is all about local theater.
Yes.
And you're doing a show right now.
I am. I'm so excited. I'm playing an old Jewish lady, so it's not that far of a jump. I'm in a play called Death at Sunset, and it's an environmental piece, a one-act play written by Larry Catrone. Mm-hmm. And
we had Larry on our show.
We did have Larry because he was doing the show before Louie Louie, mm-hmm. and so we had him on the show. But I'm very excited, and we run October 9th, 10th, 11th, the 16th, and the 17th. At the Duress Theater. I'm so excited.
Yes, it's going to be a wonderful production.
Yeah.
I'm actually doing something as well. And if I don't talk about it, I know that my producer will never forgive me. It's called The Red Fountain. It's an original production in Montclair. And it's written by Eric Adler. Mm-hmm. So that's in October as well. So when we come back next month, we'll have other things to talk about, our own shows as well. So,
perfect.
But enough about us. We have three really amazing guests with us this evening. Three.
We're
popping up this morning. And we'll let them introduce themselves, starting with...
My name's Jerry Facito, and I'm from West Hudson Arts and Theater Company in Kearney, New Jersey.
Okay. And...
My name is Jim Coe. I'm a representative from the Strollers, located in Maplewood, New Jersey.
And I'm Linda Wilcotts, and I am with the Old Library Theater in Fairlawn, New Jersey.
So three very different theaters, all local theaters. Mm-hmm. And as I was saying off mic before, I've kind of eliminated that word community theater from my vocabulary mm-hmm. because of the negative connotations that's come along with it. It's very stereotyped.
Yes.
I mean, we've all seen Waiting for Guffman. Yes, we've all seen that
literally.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely.
My favorite movie.
And
ever.
It is funny. I'm not going to say it's not. And there's a lot of, but it's not completely accurate to what is going on today in local theater outside of New York City. Actually, Jerry, I'm going to start with you, and I know the acronym is WhatCo, and that's what I'm used to calling the group. What is the mission statement for WhatCo, and how long have you guys been around?
We are about to enter our fifth season, so we are...
The baby of the group.
Right, compared to everyone else, we're just a fledgling company.
Okay.
And our mission statement is to be a cultural resource that will enrich and invigorate the West Hudson community as a whole while embracing, educating, and entertaining the people of all ages, cultures, and ability.
Now, I know you do a lot of work with younger kids as well. I think that's what's different about you. You do a lot of classes and work with young people productions.
Yes, we have an after-school program in the fall, one in the mm-hmm. spring, and we have a summer camp. And we offer... at very, very affordable prices, dance classes, theater classes, and art classes. And we come from a very, very diverse community, mm-hmm. and many of the families can't afford dance classes or art classes. And so we have made it our mission to also offer those classes in the arts to the less fortunate in our community.
See, I think that's wonderful.
That's
because
awesome.
Otherwise, where would these kids have an opportunity to do these?
And experience it.
Yeah. So I think that's a wonderful
awesome.
Thing. Jim, how long has the Strollers been around?
The Strollers have been around since 1932.
Oh, no.
As we found out going
so
through some documentation with a state, and we found our original incorporation papers the other day.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah, we have to... we were going for 50-50 registration, and apparently you need those. So we found them, and 1932 is when the Strollers were officially incorporated into the state of New Jersey.
Now,
in Maplewood.
What is the mission statement of the Strollers?
The Strollers' mission statement is to provide an opportunity for artistic and dramatic education and enjoyment for its members and the community. So the strollers, I know you kind of talked about the idea of the idea that community itself is giving community theater kind of an iffy label, a black cloud over its head. And everything that the strollers tries to put out there kind of bears our brand of for the community, by the community, and with the community. And a lot of what we try and do is to get the community involved. And we have a beautiful location in Maplewood, South Orange, a very supportive of the arts and arts education. And we really have been very fortunate with the audiences that we have that take on what we're trying to put out there.
That's wonderful. The community has to be embracing of, or in my opinion, if the community does not embrace whatever the local group is doing, it's just not going to succeed. They are imperative.
That's correct.
Absolutely.
Linda.
Yes. I would have to say with All Library Theater, it is a group that tries to present as much diversified theater as possible for all ages and all audiences. And I say that because Old Library Theater has always been one that took chances, tried to do original works, little done works, as far as doing children's theater and your classics and old standbys too.
Yeah. Now, how do you guys go about picking titles? I mean, I'll just throw it out to all of you. How do you pick your titles for the season? Because I know that for my group, the group that I'm with, which is Teaneck New Theater, we'll give them a shout out. It almost turns into a battle because everybody has very definitive ideas of what is a good show to do, what is not a good show to do. Right. So, who would I?
We've gone through different ways of picking shows, having like a board, pick directors and having them submit shows, or you know, various ways through various years, whenever the board decided. Right now, the last few years, we've had a play selection committee that has been picked by the board. People submit if they want to be on it. And if there's more than four people, then the board, you know, they kind of vote and see how many people they, who they want to be on the committee. And then directors, people, potential directors will submit shows that they would like to direct. And from there, the committee hashes it all out and reads the plays and decides what's a kind of a balanced season we can have.
It's in a similar vein, the Strollers, I think it's important to point out first, the Strollers are actually a membership organization. So if you do a show with the Strollers, there is a fee. With that fee, you get a free ticket to the remaining shows. So if you do the first show of the season and the second, you know, you have a free ticket to give to a spouse, a parent, whoever it happens to be. That being said, the Strollers select their season through a play selection committee, which I actually happen to be on for our 2017-2018 season. That's how far in advance we look.
Oh, wow.
Because there have been points in the past where we pick the next season, got to the fall show, and we're told, actually, it's coming back to Broadway. We're
so
revoking
the rights.
The rights.
Get pulled. Oh, that's another notorious subject we could get on.
It's very, very tough sometimes to think that we have a show, and then this way we have enough time.
You have to have a backup.
Exactly. Yeah. And so that's really what we do. Now, with the play selection committee, there's actually a few steps, and it sounds very funny. There is a nominating committee for the play reading committee.
Wow.
So, Lisa, if you wanted to be a play reader to submit a slate of shows, what you would do is you would ask Annie to nominate you, and Annie would be one of our nominators. And what happens is we take four people from the general membership to be on the play reading committee, who were nominated by other people in the membership, and then we have three board members, so there's never an overwhelming board presence. One of those general members becomes the chairperson of the board, keeps a tally, keeps us going. At the end of the calendar year for the play reading committee, which for us is in February, they submit a slate of shows to the board for final confirmation. The board picks the final shows. It's almost always six shows. We do three main stage shows, one children's show and a fundraiser. Children's show and fundraiser is independently chosen by the board, but the three main stage shows, which tend to be one musical, one comedy, one mystery drama. And so we get two musicals, two comedies, two mystery dramas, and kind of pair the season together and see what works well in trying to bring a diversity that OLT really talked about previously.
Yeah.
And so that's it's a lot of steps, but it really is a lot of cooks that don't really spoil the broth. It really does bring perspective along the way.
I think so. It needs balance.
That's great.
Jerry, what about you guys?
At West Hudson Arts and Theater, we have an artistic committee, which we call it, and there's four members, and they will try to come up with a season or a group of plays, and we usually do a fundraiser, and which is usually a radio play.
Mm-hmm.
That we try to incorporate politicians in our West Hudson area.
Why?
Oh.
politicians and business people.
Okay.
To come in, and we encourage them to be in it to try to draw more people that may not frequent the theater, and to draw upon maybe their circle of influence. Mm-hmm. And hey, let's go see the mayor make a fool of himself.
Mm-hmm. Now, Olivia, how does that work for you? How does
audience.
That, you know?
Yeah.
It's worked. It's been very successful. We started out as in our first abbreviated season, doing "It's a Wonderful Life,"
mm-hmm.
Radio play, mm-hmm. and it was a huge hit. And then we did it again the second year, and more people wanted to become involved in it.
Uh-huh.
And then, after that, we tried to do another radio play and another, and then that's how we start off our season. And then we have a children's play in November, a holiday family show in December. In January, we do a 24-hour musical.
Wow! Talk about that, because we actually had Joe Ferriero. No, it wasn't. This was another program on this broadband. But Joe was a guest, and talk about what the 24-hour musical is, because that's quite an event.
It really is. I was floored the first time I saw it. We do a play in 24 hours. We invite people to I guess they were anywhere from 18 to 30s somethings to come and do Rent. Mm-hmm. Or last year we did Legally Blonde. And they come on Friday night, and we say, you know, we lock you in, and they rehearse for 24 hours straight.
Oh my God!
Oh my God!
And then we put on.
This is like a festival in New
yeah.
York.
Right.
And
yeah,
then the next evening, they come, and they we have snacks throughout the evening, and we have a whole table with fruit and drinks, and then one of the members cooks breakfast in the morning, and then they rehearse, and they have lunch, and then they rehearse, and then they have dinner, and they rehearse. They do. This year was incredibly organized because they actually were ahead of schedule and had an extra hour. They had an hour break to sleep, and then they do the show at 7:30, 24 hours later.
Wow.
And it was.
I would love to be.
I have to tell. I see everybody's wheels rolling right now.
Absolutely.
It's like,
yeah.
Oh, now
that sounds
I worked with
the, fir- the first one.
Fun.
I have to tell you though. The first
was the first one. Footloose.
No, the first one was Rent.
Okay.
And after that, people left crying. We'll never do this again. And I was like,
that's because they were sleep deprived
every year.
And they come back every year. And they come back every single year. And I was like, I thought you guys weren't going to do this again. And it's, no, it's too much fun.
Yeah.
So it was very exciting.
I would love to do something like that.
I worked with one of the people when I was in a production at your company, and they had done Footloose. And I think that Danielle told me a little bit more. You made it sound very nice, but she said there were very territorial. You picked your spot on the floor to sleep, and may God help you if somebody came near you.
Yes, yes.
It was bring a sleeping bag.
Yes,
right?
They had sleeping yeah. bags, but it was, and also that the parts were revealed at the last moment. Nothing
oh,
was
wow.
like you walked in with a sealed envelope. And
yes.
So. Again, I'm seeing all of these wheels spinning at this.
Like
no, it's
really
so
fine.
I know.
We, though, as that. Being a fledgling theater company, we have a pretty unique problem, I think, because the people in our community are not used to theater. Many of them. And they won't come to see something they don't know.
Which, thank you very much for that wonderful segue. That is also a conundrum that we all go through in local theater. Do you do something that's been done to death? Do you try to take that step out and do something that maybe is a little bit different? how do you go about making that judgment call? There's shows that I love that are off the beaten path and just will not call in an audience. But how many times can you do Neil Simon?
Right. And that's the thing. And you can't even say that would necessarily draw, because, I mean, how many times are people going to see it unless you have a family member or a friend or something that's in it?
Absolutely.
After a while, you just can't keep seeing the same play over and over and over again.
Right.
You also deal with the fact of casting.
Yes.
Because you have plays that everybody's like, they've done it already. Mm-hmm. So it's like, do I want to do it again? Unless it's a part that they really love. Mm-hmm. I mean, you don't know. You really don't know. And even with shows that have just like closed off Broadway and the rights are available, sometimes you think that's going to sell. And it really doesn't sell as well as you thought it would.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. When the final slate of the shows that we look at gets to the board, the decision really becomes finding that really good combination of selling tickets. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, we are a business.
You want to sell tickets. You got
to
stay alive.
We'd love to promote the arts as much as possible. And if we could do that and not have to worry about people coming, that's fine. But at the end of the day, we do. And so the consideration a lot of the time is very much, where do we put these shows in the season, and what shows do we take a show which has just finished a long run on Broadway and think, hey, maybe we can grab people who didn't get to see it and make them pay $20 to see this play, do we go with Hairspray and, you know, try and bring in a multicultural cast and hopefully a multicultural audience, or you know, we've been struggling for a few years, Neil Simon's always a good nugget, everybody and their grandmother knows The Odd Couple, throw him in there. And you know, and that's a point of contention, because there's a lot of people who, and this is a problem that comes from the play reading committee, is that our submissions come from the membership. So sometimes you get plays that are submitted because there's one really great role that one person has played at every theater group along the way and says, you know, I'm a great Sweeney. And they just keep throwing Sweeney Todd at you. And you say, well, we're not going to do Sweeney Todd. You know, and so it's really finding what works for bringing new blood in and sustaining the members who have always been there and the paying audiences that always do show up.
And I also know with All Library Theater, being the situation that we are in now at the Fairlawn Arts Center, we have to try to pick shows that are not done by some of the rental groups that are in there, you know, people, because we share the same audiences, it seems. A lot of people come to see the shows that the other groups do in there. So you've got that going against you. And then it's also, like you said, picking a balanced season from the submissions that you've got. And then picking an alternate, you know, which we've had a couple of times, you know, oh, sorry, the rights are not available. Okay, we got to now start all over again and pick, you know, the one or two shows that had the rights revoked to it. So, I mean, it's hard. You never know.
We find that our big ticket is the children's shows. So we try to have one in November and then one later on, which our local teachers union sponsors.
Oh, wow.
So the entire cost of that production gets paid for by our local teachers union.
That's very fantastic.
And we brought in, when we were in the space that you did
Steel Magnolias
in, we brought in all of the entire third grade of the town of Kearney to see that, and we had to do it in two shifts.
Wow.
But now in our new space, which is much smaller, we asked, how are we going to do this? So we worked out with the superintendent that we would take the show. This year we did Flat Stanley, and because we try to do a show in the spring that is related to literature. The one in the fall is related to maybe a princess or a prince type show. And in the spring, it's related to literature. And the superintendent for both shows, actually all of our shows in our educational, allows us to put flyers into the schools.
That's
magnificent. You are listening to Talk of the Town on BroadbandBoxOffice.com. We are live every second Wednesday of every month. This month, we're doing something special on a Tuesday. But back to our conversation with our local theater groups. Now, I have to bring it up because it is something that we all do deal with in this community, precasting. Now, there's a very delicate balance to this, and there's part of it is I've been a director, I've been an actor, I've been in all aspects of theater. Sometimes you have to think about, well, I'd love to do this show, but I have no one that I know of who could play blah, 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 whatever that role is. And gentlemen, you are definitely, men are a wonderful commodity in local theater.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Worth their weight.
Oh, to be a guy.
To be a guy is right.
You know, and it's true. It's difficult
in
to
demand.
Get. Yes. Guys are difficult to.
Worth
to,
their weight in gold.
Yes, they are. So how do you feel? Do you do a show that you can, that you know in the back of your head you can kind of cast? Do you just go out there? And also, and I've had the experience too, where I've gone to an audition in all good faith, only to find out later that the show, that role was already cast. So it's like, you know, don't waste my mascara.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
You know? I've been on both sides too, with directing and acting and producing and all the other functions that go with doing theater. And yeah, I think with pre-casting, that is, that's a sensitive issue. I think what I would do, I mean, if you have people in mind, is just ask them to come out and read, because, you know, even though you ask somebody to come out, there could be somebody else that comes out that just blows them away.
Right.
And your decision changes right then and there.
Right.
But I mean, you know, it's to kind of lead people on. We've seen it all the time, and you read about it on the social media, and this one got cast, and I wish I would have known, and blah, 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 blah. It is such a sensitive thing. I mean, I just think that just having people come out, say, listen, I'd like you to come out, blah, blah, and don't promise anything, because you really run into a lot of problems that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I have too much more, really, to add to it. Yeah. I'm also of two minds of it, where when I see a casting notice that says we're casting Shrek the Musical, and Shrek has already been cast, he will be played by blah, 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 and the show hasn't even opened for auditions yet. At first, I think, well, that's very forthright of them. It's like going on a date with a girl who says, this isn't going to get a second date, but let's enjoy the drinks
right,
now.
Right.
And it's like, you know what? I know what I'm getting into when I go there.
Right.
It's weird. That's kind of how I work.
I really love the way you put that. And you read about it, that it is already cast, and it's like, oh, okay. But you know what? They're already making it known, so...
Exactly. I should appreciate that, but part of me absolutely hates that they didn't even see me.
Right.
And who knows what I could have done.
Right. They are, they are being honest enough to tell you that, but people still get offended by it, you know?
Mm-hmm. But I think with the idea of precasting, it's... I tend to try and stay away from shows that do. When we're on the board and we're looking at the slate for the season, we just want to say... Can you cast with the membership we know we're bound to have next season? Can you cast about 60-70% of that show? Because if we have to, you know,
kind of
scrounge around.
Because you do want to use your membership first.
Of course, always. And when we cast for Hairspray, we had very few young African American members, and that was a concern. And luckily enough, we managed to go to the high school and say, "Hey, we're doing Hairspray," and I was worried. As a board member, I was worried when that was being put up for the season was, will we get enough students to be in the show to justify the selection of the show? Mm-hmm. Because if you do Hairspray, and there's a lot of young white students who come out and play teenagers, and then we have three black students, the dichotomy is so obvious that it almost takes you out of the show.
Right.
We lucked out. But I think that's a consideration is, will you be satisfied with what we have now if we had to grab a few from outside of what our purview already has?
And we're sharing audiences. I mean, there are so many groups around. Thank you, Lisa.
There are a lot of groups around.
That you know, you read about somebody, you know, all the way from here to out by the Pennsylvania border. Oh, my God, I know so-and-so there. They're doing a show there that's hard to cast. Sometimes it's really hard to cast because there aren't enough people around anymore to do all the shows that there are.
I think it depends upon the show. Now, I will speak, unfortunately, Greg Leosi, who was supposed to be on our panel tonight, he got caught up in a meeting, but he's directing a production of Heathers.
Okay.
It's the first production in the tri-state area. The rights were just released, and he said to me that there were over 60 people that came to audition for this show.
Oh, sure, because it's the first one that's kind of being done.
So, I mean, what a glorious place to be as a director, where you have that opportunity to really choose from you know, not just because somebody showed up and I think I can work with them, to really have that experience of choosing the perfect cast. So, you know, okay, so we've got a great show. Let's hope that he's selling tickets for it. I wish them all the best. That's an anomaly, though, that that kind of thing happens. The rest of us are going, all right, so what's the next Heathers?
Yeah. Right. I agree with you 100%. When we're selecting our shows, we really take into consideration, can we cast this show? I know as someone who's directed high school shows for 20 years, you know, you precast it in your head.
Yes.
Can I do this show? I really want to. Do we have the kids to do this show? Yes. Okay. Auditions come. All bets are off. You know.
Right.
You know, I want to know I have enough people to do this show or the right people. And then when we do have the audition, all bets are off, and whoever's the best person for the job gets the job.
100%.
Yeah, you have to have a preconceived notion of you know, if you're able to cast something. I think going into
I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. It's done in professional theater. Yeah, I don't think that Bradley Cooper just showed up and said, hey, think about doing the Elephant Man, maybe, you know?
Right.
These things are thought out. So it's not necessarily a bad thing if somebody is going to bring the product to the table.
Yeah.
But to be unfair and consider nobody else and become very... almost incestual with your casting, and I use that word very carefully.
Right.
Yes, you're using the same people, you are not expanding, and the way I was taught in business is that the newness of any organization is its life's blood. So you want to bring new people into your groups.
You do.
New people
always
bring new audience, and we're back to, we're here to please an audience.
See, us being a new fledgling company, not only do we need new actors to bring in audience, I need new directors. I need new
technicians.
People.
Technicians, that's the other thing.
There were many shows that I got a tap on the shoulder, and it was like the toilet's overflowing in the ladies' room. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't get up. I'm running the soundboard because I was the only one that knew how to run the soundboard.
Right.
And it's like, deal with it. You know, I'm running the sound and the lights, and I can't get up from the desk. Mm-hmm.
And now that's part of the whole back to what we're saying about local theater and the idea of community versus my verbalization of calling it local theater. Yes, the person who is running the soundboard also happened to build the set, also happened to go and get the props. Mm-hmm. We all do everything.
Mm-hmm.
That's just how it is.
Yes, definitely.
And...
wearing 5 million hats when you're doing a show.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's even like with casting, like we were just saying, sometimes, you know, people go where the shows are now, and there's so many groups. I mean, I don't think people will hesitate if there's a role that they really want to play to drive 50 miles out of the way to do it.
I actually have not heard of people doing that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There are a number of people who chase one role.
Right.
And there are a number of people who will go for only one role.
Right.
Who
exactly
will, and this is one of those things that bothers me, is if I'm casting for Prelude to a Kiss and I'm looking for a Peter and I cast him as Peter's best friend, and he wrote on his form that he had no problem with that, and then suddenly he turns me down, suddenly a conflict pops up when he was clearly only looking to play Peter.
Okay.
That's an issue that I find that a lot of performers think it's a strike against them if they say, I only want this role, whereas... again, it's with the precasting notion of, I'd rather you be up front with me so I can cast this show already.
Mm-hmm. I never necessarily understood that either, because if you want to act and you want to do it, you'll take anything.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
Well, you get that a lot. I mean, people will put down on their audition form, I'll take X amount of roles and list them, and then you have a call back. Well, no, I only want to do such and such role. I mean, it's like you said, don't waste my time.
Right.
Don't waste anybody else's time. I mean, it's, you know, it's crazy. I don't understand it myself, but...
yeah.
Because if you want to do it, you'll take it.
Right.
It doesn't matter what the role is, you know.
Right.
Absolutely.
Also, I'll put my director hat on for the moment. You may have a different vision than the actor coming in. I had a gentleman come in, audition for me, who had a completely different idea of a role he wanted for a show that I just directed. And I cast him in, actually it was the lead role. He was completely... taken aback by that because he didn't see himself like that. Mm-hmm. And I said, no, I see you. And he was spectacular. Mm-hmm. He was absolutely pitch perfect.
And you have good instincts about that, too.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
I think that, yes. All right, so let's ask the question. Why do you do theater?
That's a good question.
All of us really are half out of our minds when I tell them.
Well, I think it's I think it's a combination or a culmination of all of the arts in one media. I know the first, I was in college and I was asked to come back and play the first musical at Kearney High School. And I came back and played in the orchestra for Brigadoon. And I was like, having to count 200 measures and play a triangle note, it's like, I never want to do this again. And then a couple of months later, I was asked to play Guys and Dolls, and I was like, wow, this is great, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think it's just a combination of all of the art forms in one, and it's very exciting.
It's something I think I always wanted to do. I can remember back, I think, when I was like 5 or 6, doing like a backyard production with my friends of The Wizard of Oz, you know, and then it just, from there, you know, you just move on, you do your school shows, your high school shows, college, and you just keep doing it, and it's just something that you do. I mean, it's a love that you have, you know.
Yeah, I was talking to my girlfriend about this about a week ago now. I'm just somebody whose personality is, what's the next project? And for me, I do about 2 or 3 shows a year and have since I was in high school. And it's that idea of what's next. You finished playing Tevye, what's next? Right. You finished Full Monty, what's next? And when I came over to Maplewood after meeting somebody who was affiliated with that organization, I was there 2 years and got a phone call one day and said, we'd like you to be on the board. And I said, yes, you know, what's next? And when I was on the board, I was on the play reading committee. Now I'm the secretary, but while I was on the board, the first time around, I said, we need to change the website. Mm-hmm. We need to get a social media presence. And all these things, I need to take them on. I need to see what's next. I need to see what the next challenge is. And in very few places do you get the satisfaction of seeing that final product come together, whether you've produced it, whether you only have a monologue, whether you've played Sweeney, like we talked about before.
That's true.
And then you get people to clap for you. I mean, that's just wonderful icing on the cake, too.
It really is.
And it's never really about the applause. It's really, for me, that final note, that final oomph when you bow and you're like, that's it. That curtain slams and everything that you've poured, your nerves and your stress and your tears into for the last 3 months, basically, has culminated in this, and it almost could not have been more wonderful.
It's a feeling that people who don't do theater or not into the arts, that they don't understand.
You know, a very good friend of mine posted a while back on social media, and I never forgot this. He said a coworker made very negative comments to him because he was taking a week of vacation off because he was going into Tech Week for a show, and it was really intense. So he was taking the whole week off and, you know, his vacation time. And she could not understand this. Why would you take your vacation time to do something that you're not being paid for? That, you know, why would you do that? It made no sense. And weigh in.
Because
I know what I said. I said my answer was, just because they call it a play doesn't mean you're playing. You're working very hard, and you're creating something, and to create something is a very wonderful thing.
Right, and it's just like I said, people that don't have that understanding, they just can't imagine why you would do that. But then again, we might not understand why they take off for something that's important to them.
Right.
You know, I think people in the arts are the only ones who really understand
the excitement,
why we do that.
The excitement and the energy that you feel inside is just, it's an incredible
rush. And if you're professional about it, so you want to do the best job possible, so this is important to you, so you're going to take that time.
Excellent words, Linda. Thank you, because that brought me to my next question, which was, at this point in time and who we are as a society, it's my opinion that I feel you can see as good a production here at WhatCo, the Strollers, Old Library, Teaneck New Theater, as you can in New York City. What do you think?
I agree.
I think there's been many productions, but we've gotten in the last few years, since we're so close to New York, And there's so many people just wanting to perform and wanting to do something that they're willing to come out from New York to New Jersey to do something. So you get a lot of people that are professional or have professional
credits
or their way of doing things that come out here to do things. And that does add
to hone their craft.
Right. Yeah. And a lot of people, you know, that just didn't want to do theater for a living because they wanted to have stability or make a living, and they're really, really talented, and this is, you know, they've chose other professions, but they really have the professional quality to do shows, so you've got a lot of that, too.
In our little theater, the production of Steel Magnolias, very small theater, but everyone, I mean, people still talk about it because, I mean, people were passing tissue boxes around crying, listening to that your monologue at the end of Steel Magnolias. People were weeping out loud. It was, you know, the production was just so chilling.
Yeah, and I never like to speak ill of really any performance just because being on that side, I know what's gone into it. So if a Broadway show doesn't come together, if I'm not enjoying it, a number of people still have put their time, their energy, and their effort into it, and I won't speak bad of it.
I'm not saying speak ill. I'm just saying quality is equivalent.
Agreed, and that's what I was going to say, is that I have paid very, very good money to see a show on Broadway with two Tony Award winners and Emmys out the wazoo, and then gone to a show in Northern Jersey and paid $15 for a ticket and was blown off my feet for three consecutive hours. Wow.
Definitely seen better theater in local theater than I've seen in New York.
And I think the same time, I don't know of many theaters that have a longer run than maybe three weekends for a community theater.
Yes.
So if you break it down, you're going to have about 2, 4, 5 times 3. So 15 performances max to really do that role, and you might never get to do that role again. Mm-hmm. Whereas you have somebody who's on Broadway, they missed it on Monday, they'll get it on Tuesday. Right. Or if they're dark on Monday, you know, they'll get it Wednesday, whatever it happens to be. And they have a contract for a year. They're not going anywhere. They're a tourist trap of a show. And I'm not saying that that happens a lot, but you have people out here who this is their dream, and maybe they're not going to get to that Broadway stage, but right there for those 15 shows, they were more present than most people you'll find in other venues.
And they had a whole lot less rehearsal.
Mm-hmm. And we have a lot of people from out here now that are doing things that are also going into New York. They're, you know, you can share their experiences there. They're doing festivals and off Broadway and, you know, a lot of little experimental things.
True.
So, you know, it's very interesting. I mean, you can follow, you know, we've got the best of both worlds. We got New Jersey, we got New York, and I mean, it's such a cultural place.
If they're coming east, they got to come through Jersey anyway.
Right.
You know, so if they stop at a community theater or two and light up that stage on the way, then, you know, we're all the better for it.
Right.
Well, my personal goal is to change the attitude of society in general and think of local theater as just that. Hey, we just happen to be located in Kearney, in Maplewood, in Fairlawn, in Teen. There's no difference in the people that you're seeing have, you know, just as much talent.
Right.
Absolutely.
Just as much talent. Well, we're going to wrap this up. I have loved this past 35 minutes because it has been talking about something that is an absolute passion of mine. So, closing thoughts.
Oh, if anyone out there is looking for a place to hone their craft, we need actors, we need directors, we need an audience, and we need tech people. So come visit us at West Hudson Arts and Theater.
I think that's the same for all of us. I mean, all Library Theater, too. Always looking for people to work behind the scenes and tech work and producing, directing, on stage. You know, we've got our production coming up next month, The Fiddler on the Roof. Funny thing happened on the way to the Forum. Oh, boy, how did I get Fiddler on the Roof? That was a slip. Funny thing happened on the way to the Forum. It began with an F, so I had that right. But that's coming up in October, and I'm sure you guys have shows coming up, too.
Yeah, you know, just to echo their sentiments, Maplewood always looking for more life, more blood. We get a couple new people every year and really manage to hold on to them, and it's served us well, and it helps us serve the community well.
Absolutely.
And, you know, we have our fundraiser coming up in 2 weeks, I think it is, And, you know, all the information's on www.thestrollers.org, which I maintain. So if you send an email through that website, I'll get it and I'll respond to you. And, you know, we're for the community at Maplewood, and that's, I feel like Absolutely. That's across the board, too. We're here for them just as much as they're here to help us.
And we share audiences, too. People mm-hmm. go to all different theaters, which mm-hmm. is nice. There's Absolutely. So many of us that you don't have, you know, to worry about seeing something.
Okay. I'm actually going to close with just a quick little story. The last show that I happened to direct, there were two young ladies in the audience, and they had gotten up right at the beginning of the second act after the curtain had gone up, and I thought to myself for a moment, did they go to the bathroom? And they went backstage, they came back, and I said to them very nicely afterwards, they were with a friend of mine, you need to stay in your chair for the rest of the performance. Find out afterwards that was the first live show they had ever seen. And they just wanted to go backstage to see what it looked like back there. They wanted. And I said to my friend, why didn't you tell me? I would have taken them on a tour. What do you mean they've never seen live theater before? They've never seen live theater before, and they didn't know how to act, what to expect, because they had not been exposed to it. So this is an opportunity. Local theater is the opportunity for a very small amount of money to see something cultural, expand your mind, expand your thoughts, learn, and entertain.
And teach theater etiquette.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And to entertain.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So with that, thank you, my friends, for coming to my show this month. Annie, thank you.
Thank you for having
We're
us.
We're all so busy. This is theater season. We're all getting ready to do shows. So until next month, our next program is October 14th, where our guest will be Scott Barbarino. Richard will be back from Malibu. So until then, my name is Lisa Dascoli. You've been listening to Talk of the Town. Thank you so much, and we'll talk to you again.